This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown.
You're all very welcome to Raised on Songs and Stories here on Near 90 FM. My name is Gerry Cooley, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be travelling the highways and byways about Dublin City and County, meeting all sorts of people talking about all sorts of things. Songs, poems and stories, all about the good old days. And you never know, if you listen, you might hear somebody that you know. So get the kettle on, make yourself a cup of tea, put the feet up and sit back and enjoy yourself. My very first guest today is a man called Austy Wearin. Jack of all trades, he served his time as a pipe organ builder for 7 years. Great man with his hands and a great musician. Came across him, he was doing some painting and refurbishment on a friend of mine's Tinker's Caravan. It was an original with the pot-bellied stove, and I came across Austy one day. He was doing the touch-up painting on it. We got talking, and before very long, we had it arranged that me and him would get together in the Gypsy Caravan and maybe record a bit of music together. The first song up is a song called Easy and Slow, a favourite of mine. And just to set the scene, in a Tinker's Caravan overlooking the N32 roundabout just off the M50 in Clonshock, in the yard of Christy Gunning. He's the man who owns the caravan. And I'm on vocals and guitar, and Austy absolutely steals the show with his accordion playing. So Austy, take it away.
First met with Annie, a neat little girdle and not a bit shy. She told me her father, who came from Dungannon, would take her back home in the sweet by and by. And what's it to any man, whether or no, whether I'm easy or whether I'm true? As she lifted her petticoat, hazy and slow, I rolled up my sleeves for to buckle her shoe. Along Thomas Street and down by the Liffey, the sunshine was fading and the evening grew dark. Along by Kingsbridge, and begot in a jiffy, me arms were around her beyond in the park. And what's it to any man, whether or no, whether I'm easy or whether I'm true? As she lifted her petticoat, hazy and slow, I rolled up my sleeves till buckle her shoe. Now if you go down to the town of Dungannon, you can search till your eyeballs are burnt out and blind. Be a walking, running, sitting or lying, a girdle like any you'll just never find. And what's it to any man, whether or no, whether I'm Maisy or whether I'm true. As she lifted her petticoat, hazy and slow, I rolled up my sleeves for to buckle her shoe.
And yes, that was the sound of myself and Austin on Easy and Slow. And just in case you're interested in, yes, we did shoot some video, just in case we ever released that as a single and they need it for Top of the Pops when we hit the number one spot. I then started to talk about Austin about the early 40s, where he went to school up in the model school in Malbus Street. And this was a little story from those days.
School Cullen Killa, an all-Irish school.
So you were good at the old guys.
Fluent Irish speaker, I used to be, but I threw her away when I left school.
Your favourite subject at school? I'm trying to lead into where you started doing your drawing. What was your favourite subject in school?
But I got terrible trouble over drawing, because when the school teacher would be teaching me, he'd be putting things on the blackboard, I'd have a piece of paper and I'd be drawing first.
he'd be doodling.
Eventually, he put me down the very last seat in the class. It was a big classroom. And he says, you can draw now all you like, I've finished teaching. So I did. Didn't get taught anymore. At that time, I was near leaving school.
Right.
Coming up to 14.
Yeah.
He was a Kerry man.
Right.
And he took me out on the road, on the class, brought me up, come up here, and he says, weirdy weirdin. And he says to all the class, there was about 30 in the class, and he said, Dublin is playing tomorrow, and they're playing Kerry. And he said, who's going to win? And what did the kids all say? Dublin. And he says, well, I'll show you, says he, or what Kerry is going to do with Dublin tomorrow. And he caught me around there, and he put his leg out to knock me down. And as soon as he done and went to bend me, I bent down and caught him with the leg, and I pushed him with my shoulder, and he went down on the ground flat. You want to hear the cheer? I put him on his back, 6 foot. Six foot man, yeah, they only went. I didn't care about it.
No, I was trying to belittle you.
Didn't belittle me, whereas Dublin and proud of it and still am.
And fair play to you, Austin, given that Kerry school teacher his comeuppance. We're going to finish off a little piece of music by Austin. It's a little bit of a reel of a jig, so here we go. Well, and think of the circumstances of those recordings in that horse-drawn gypsy caravan. I often wonder what the people trapped in the traffic jam on the N32 roundabout thought when they seen the gypsy caravan rocking from side to side during the music recordings. And so we leave Austin and we head over to the south side of the river, to number 6 College Street to be precise, where we'll find the Irish Yeast Company. And this is one of the meetings that I had that wasn't really by chance. I purposely went there, opened the door 4 years ago on the pretense of looking for birthday candles, because I was always intrigued by the shop front. It's one of the oldest Victorian shop fronts in Dublin at the moment, and I always wanted to know what was going on behind it. So when I went through the door, who did I find? Only John Moreland and his brother Christopher. They had been born in the shop. Their father had worked there in the 1900s, and in the 1920s he was acting manager, and then he ended up owning it and then running it as a business. So I went to John. John is in his 80s, and he started to tell me all little snippets about what was going on in the shop down through the years. I first of all spoke to him about the big freeze in 1947, and it led me straight into a little story that he knew about Jim Larkin, and Jim Larkin's office was actually next door to the shop in the Workers' Union of Ireland headquarters.
The big freeze of 1947, where Dublin was basically snowed under.
I do. I remember very well, because Jim Larkin died at that time, and his remains was on display inside. So that's how I remember it so well.
Yeah, it started snowing, I think, in February and didn't finish till the end of March.
I can't remember, but I know it was very, very heavy, and I remember that he was being waked in next door when it was the Workers' Union of Ireland.
Did you like Jim Larkin? Was he a hero of yours, or did you know much
about
him? Yeah,
he was a proper gentleman. I mean, like, I think people had a wrong impression of him. He was a very, very nice man to speak to. So he used to come in here occasionally. If their phone was broken down, he'd use our phone here. Cool. And he used to come in here. He was a very big man, a huge man, like, yeah. You know. He was, you could sort of say he was built like Paisley, you know. He was a big man like Paisley,
I understand, yeah, yeah.
But a very nice man, very nice man, yeah.
Did he talk to your father while he was in the shop?
He used to talk to father occasionally and that.
Did they ever exchange political views, or did they ever have discussions?
Well, no, because, you see, at that time, my father was in bad health, and if he met him, he'd be asking him how he was keeping and all that type of thing,
I then asked John, because of the bakery connection, what was it like around Christmas time in a shop which basically supplied a lot of the ingredients to make the cakes, as well as the yeast to the industry itself?
Well, it was very, very busy.
Yeah, at that time we used to sell enough. This is before supermarkets came into being. And we used to sell ice and sugars, ground almonds, peel, cherries, all that type of stuff, and making cakes. So, I mean, the supermarkets weren't there then, so they came to the like of us here. And we'd be run off our feet here from maybe late October up to Christmas.
Right,
of course, supermarkets changed all that.
And you helped out in the shop.
Pardon?
And you helped out in the shop.
Oh yeah. Well, there was about four or five of us at that time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be the most that was ever worked here at any one time. Four or five.
There might have been up to seven at one time. A couple of young lads packing stuff like that, you know.
And would people phone in for orders, and you would pack them up?
No,
and post them out?
No, they just come in and just ask for them.
Okay, there was no
like
delivery
that.
Service. Was
well,
there?
We had the delivery service. We see up to about 1970, we were still doing a bit of wholesale to the bakery trade, some of the small bakers and all that. But that's finished, because they gradually went out of business, and we saw that it was a write-off, that end of it. So we completely concentrated then on retail business.
The shop public.
Yeah.
The public people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like, was the shop decorated, or did you just put up Christmas trees?
Not really. We didn't. No.
If you look at the shop, it's probably enough decorated as it stands.
No, not really. No.
Right.
We'd be very busy up to Christmas, and then January and February would be flat.
Right.
And then from about the end of March or early April, they start moving to make wedding cakes and that for weddings and that coming along. So the wedding season would run from about April to May up to about September. And after that, you get a bit of a lull till the Christmas starts about the end of October.
Right. The Halloween bracks, would that be?
Halloween bracks,
yeah,
where they used to be very, very,
very
popular,
but
they're not nowadays.
No.
It's all died out.
Who are the people now that are buying?
They come in here.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you have some professional chefs and confectioners making wedding cakes. A lot of immigrants coming in here, and they're getting into that type of business too. They see an opening for that type of thing. And some of them actually on the internet, and they're advertising on the internet, and they're getting quite a lot of business.
I'm not going to ask you because
on the internet. As you know yourself, I mean, small bakery shops and confection shops are nearly gone. There's very few left. I mean, at one time, there was dozens and dozens of them all around the place.
Yeah.
Now, if you found about a half dozen in Dublin, you'd be lucky.
I'm happy to report that after 4 years, I'm still visiting John in the Irish Yeast Company, and we have many long discussions about the history of Dublin. On one of my interviews that we did behind the counter out in the sort of the office area, I noticed a poem pinned up on the wall. It was called Let Me Live. And myself and John had a read through it, and I asked John to read it for me, and this is what happened.
I love to live.
And who gave it to you?
I love to live. It was given to me by a cousin. My cousin in Camden Street, the butcher. Today, dear Lord, I'm 80, and there's much I haven't done. I hope, dear Lord, you will let me live until I'm 81. But then, if I haven't finished all I want to do, would you please let me stay a while until I'm 82? So many places I want to go, so very much to see. Do you think that you could manage to make it 83? The world is changing very fast, and there's so much in store. I'd like it very much to live till 84. And if by then I'm still alive, I'd like to stay till 85. More planes will be up in the air, so I'd be like to stick and see what happens to the world when I'm 86. I know, dear Lord, it's much to ask, and it must be nice in heaven, but I'd really like to stay until I'm 87. I know by then I'll be slow and sometimes will be late, but it would be so pleasant to be around at 88. I will have seen so many things and had a wonderful time, so I'm sure that I'll be willing to leave at 89, maybe. Just one more thing I'd like to say, dear Lord. I thank you kindly, but if it's okay with you, I'd love to pass 90.
Very good. That's called pushing it.
For our next guest, we're heading back over the Liffey out to North County Dublin to the village of Santry. Brings me back on home territory. And these two songs bring into sharp focus that there is a rural side to Dublin on both sides of the Liffey, north side and south side. Santry has long ceased being a rural village. It has been swallowed up by the city. But the rural divide has moved on further out past Swords, for example. And then on the south side, then we have the Bourne of Breenas and we have the Ballybracks, still outside the city limits to a certain extent. And the lady that I'm talking to in Santry, an old staunch Santry family, her name is Rosaline McCormick. She's given us two songs. I'm going to let the singing do the talking for these two extracts. And she regards herself as a Hill 16 girl, a staunch Dublin football team supporter. And the first song she sings is My Dublin Bay. It was written by Mayo Higgins. I don't know who recorded it. Maybe Rosaline will release this version of it when you hear it. And then we're followed up by something that appeared in The Quiet Man back in 1952. I Will and I Won't Get Married Because the Humour Is Off Me Now.
I have travelled far over the ocean to a land that is wondrous and fair. But of my Dublin Bay I am dreaming, for my heart is will always be there. When shadows of evening are stealing and the lights from the city are gay, sure the lights that I see in my memory are shining on my Dublin Bay. I have riches and rings on my fingers, but my loneliness I can't disguise. How I long for the love light that lingers in the softness of true Irish eyes. This song from my heart I am singing, from a heart that's more lonely each day. Could it be I can only be dreaming of loved ones by
This song from my heart I am singing, from a heart that's more lonely each day. Could it be I can only be dreaming of loved ones by my Dublin Bay? As I went out one morning, it being the month of May, a farmer and his daughter I met upon me way. The girl sat down quite calmly to the milking of her cow, saying, "I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now." "Ah, be quiet, you foolish daughter, and hold your simple tongue. You're better free and easy and happy while you're young." But the daughter shook her shoulder and she milked her patient cow, saying, "I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now." "Well, indeed, I'll tell me mother the awful things you say. Indeed, I'll tell me mother this very blessed day. Oh, daughter dear, go easier, you'll start a fearful row. For a man may have his humour, but the humour is off me now. Asher, who are you to turn me that merry young yourself, and took me, darling mother, from off the single shelf? Oh, daughter dear, go easier, you'll start a fearful row. For I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me. Asher, if you must be married, will you tell me what you'll do?" And quickly she did answer the same as mine you. "I'll be mistress of me dairy, me butcher and me cow, for I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now." "And sure, if you must be married, will you tell me who's the man?" And quickly she did answer, "There's William, James and John, a carpenter, a tailor and a man to milk the cow, for I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now." Well, at last the daughter married, and married well to do. She loved her darling husband for a month, a year or two. But John was all a tyrant and she never lacked a row, saying, "I'm sorry that I married, for the humour is off me now."
And yes, that was the beautiful voice of Rosalie McCormick from Santry out here in North County Dublin. Our next and last item today comes from a woman called Maureen Buckley, later to become Maureen Fitzgibbon. She lived in a place called Sinnott Street over in the North Strand, and at the age of 20 she was present on that fateful night when the Germans came visiting Dublin and they bombed the North Strand. And just to set the scene, it's Whit Weekend 1941.
Why did they bomb? Cleaning the windows, putting up the new curtains, for the next day was our whit, and we all done our little job. We all done our curtains, we painted our windowsill and we scrubbed our step for whit. It was a beautiful weather, the sun was beaming, 31st of May exactly to be right. My mother and our neighbour went to the Electric Cinema, went to see Who Killed Aunt Maggie. That was the name of the film that night. And the next thing was, we were still cleaning. She was standing talking to Mrs. Campbell and that. And there was a kind of a gloom in the air.
Right.
So my father went to bed. He had to go to work on Saturday. He worked Saturday in the corporation. And Peg went to bed. But my mother and I always stayed up talking. We went upstairs and we opened the window because it was very hot. And we were leaning out. And she said, "Good morning," said she. "It reminds me there of Berlin." Isn't that funny? I'll always remember saying that. And she saw people running and up and down Clarendon Street. Now, it's in the street there.
Right.
That's Sinnott Street. The North Strand behind their back. William Street was there and Clarendon Street was there, and they were going up. And the next thing we heard, a little bomb. Now, that was the first one that dropped on Summer Hill. that's Dawn. And what was happening? The people was all going up the stay. What's happening up there? And William Street, they were all running up there. Like, there's something going on.
Yeah. Was there a big explosion? No.
Yeah, it was.
Was it a big explosion?
It was, but not as big as the North Strand. The North, now, this is not the North Strand one.
Right.
This was a little one up in Summerhill. The name of the chemist where it dropped that was called Duggan's Chemist. I don't know where it is now. It's opposite the old maid's home there. Oh, the morning, she said, I think we'll go. So we came down, and my father said, if you had to be going to work in the morning, you wouldn't be going out looking for bombs. Now, that's what he said. I'll always remember that. Now imagine that. I do remember that. So Sean stayed with my father and Peg, and I went with my mother. And as we were walking, we came out of the house.
Yeah.
Now, there's the North Town behind me. Our house is here, yeah. William Street and Clancy. We went to go up William Street, and I met this man, Mr. McLaughlin. God bless his miss, isn't it terrible, he said. That's like a bomb, isn't it? And my mother lit up there. I'm going up to collect me little fella's suit. He's making his Holy Communion in the morning.
This is Mr. McLaughlin.
Mr. McLaughlin said to me. So my mother and I kept on walking, and he walked. So I went to number 11, to the Cunninghams. They lived there. And the whole lot of neighbours are all talking in there. Oh, you know
this
the
is 11 Sinner Street?
No, 11 William Street. It's on the way
went
up.
Around William Street, okay.
Well, we came over our house, went up William Street, met Mr. McLaughlin. He lived on the North Strand. He was going up on the North
Strand.
He was
going up.
Up to collect the suit. So we all ended up in Cunninghams. So Mr. McLaughlin went down up to get the suit. And on his way back, I was coming out of number 11. And we walked together. I said, please God, it's all over. And as I turned the corner to go to Sinner Street, he walked out to the Strand and the plane came right over my head between the tracks. That was a landmine, so that's what happened on the Strand.
Oh.
And I went back that way screaming, and I tore myself from there to there screaming, because everything went pitch dark, lights went, gas went, everything went, and I was left lying in the dark. And nobody talks about that. Oh. But I remembered that it was last night. Oh, I got terrified.
An interesting postscript to that story that Maureen told was in 1991 there was a ceremony commemorating the 50th anniversary of it, which was attended by the German ambassador who formally apologised to the city of Dublin for those bombings. Maureen noticed a man who was standing there at the ceremony who was just too young to have been around for the bombings, and curiosity got the better of her. Then when the crowds disappeared away, she asked him who he was and why he was there. And it turned out that he was Mr. McLaughlin's son. Remember, Mr. McLaughlin was carrying a communion suit when he was killed? Well, it was for that gentleman who was attending the ceremonies. There was a poignant end to that story. And you can sense in Maureen's voice there how terrifying the whole experience was. The years haven't made it any less stressful and frightening for her, and she was also relieved to the fact that if she told me the story of Sinner Street wouldn't be lost forever.
Raised on songs and
so that brings us to the end of our show. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you can hear from me this time next week on Near 90 FM.
Passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town, the hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes.
This program was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.